The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup, remembering a maverick.
Paying tribute to John McCain.
And a soulful tribute to Aretha Franklin. I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's start this weekend here in Washington, where folks have been paying tribute to John McCain, but it was in the Capitol where McCain spent decades in the Senate. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle gathered to remember his service to the country Friday.
This day, we honor a true American hero, Senator John McCain.
Let's turn to CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman. Steve, let's start with that memorial service in the Rotunda. The president was not there, but Vice President Mike Pence was?
Absolutely. This was all these events this week honoring John McCain from beginning to end have been choreographed by John McCain and his family. The two most prominent people who have not received invitations, President Donald Trump and John McCain's vice presidential candidate, Sarah Palin. They are nowhere to be seen, and that's intentional. Mike Pence was there, spoke briefly.
May God bless the memory of John McCain. May God comfort his family and friends. And may God continue to bless the United States of America.
And a couple of times referred to the president, President Trump. Those were the only two times Mr. Trump was referred to directly or indirectly.
Folks also took part in events throughout Arizona, Steve. You were there, including at the state capitol in Phoenix. And also at the North Phoenix Baptist Church, where former Vice President Joe Biden spoke.
He touched so many lives. And I've gotten calls not just because people knew we were friends, not just from people around the country, but leaders around the world.
Steve, tell me about McCain's love and connection to Arizona.
Well, you know, initially when he went there and was a candidate for the House, he was being called a carpetbagger. The only reason he ended up in Arizona, at least initially, was because that was the home state of his second wife, Cindy McCain. So when he decided to go into politics, he chose, well, I'll go to Arizona. In one of the debates he had in his House campaign, he was accused of being a carpetbagger, and he came back with this great line, essentially saying, you know, the place that has been my home the longest was the Hanoi Hilton, referring to the POW camp he was in for more than 5 years in North Vietnam. After that, the carpetbagging tag never came up again. He became an adopted home stater of Arizona, supported all the teams, was a big fan of the Diamondbacks baseball team, the Cardinals football team. In fact, at the memorial service in Arizona, one of the star players for the Arizona Cardinals, Larry Fitzgerald, was one of those paying tribute.
I'm black. He was white. I'm young. He wasn't so young. He lived with physical limitations brought on by war. I'm a professional athlete. He ran for president. I run out of bounds.
Steve, you mentioned a bit about McCain's service in Vietnam. He's being buried at the U.S. Naval Academy outside Washington in Annapolis, Maryland. Can you tell me a little bit more about his time serving in the U.S. Navy during those really troubled years for the U.S.?
Well, you know, he apparently entered the Navy as a cocky airman, a cocky flyer. In fact, Mitch McConnell referred to him that way at the Friday service in the Rotunda of the Capitol.
Generations of Americans will continue to marvel at the man who lies before us. The cocky, handsome naval aviator who barely scraped through school and then fought for freedom in the skies.
But when he became a prisoner, obviously things changed. He was probably someone who did not feel much vulnerability. You talk to lots of young pilots, they feel they can do everything. He quickly learned he could not do many things after he was captured. And that's really what changed his life. At one point, I think this was in his acceptance speech at the 2008 Republican convention, he said he learned to love his country by being a prisoner in someone else's. This is where he really developed his love for America. Not to say he didn't have it before, but this is where this intense relationship with his country began. And it really affected his entire life. Obviously, physically, he was never the same, always had a bit of a limp, could not really raise either of his arms above his shoulders. And he became a man who devoted much of his life to foreign policy, to international relations. And I think the reconciliation he had with Vietnam, you have to remember, he was one of the proponents of saying, yes, even though I was a prisoner in Vietnam, the U.S. should have a diplomatic relationship with Vietnam. I think this is sort of a something that you can look back at and say, this is why he always liked bipartisanship. He was willing to work with the other side, in this case, willing to work with the country that put him in a prison camp and tortured him, and he wanted Republicans to work with Democrats as well.
And finally, Steve, do we know about what Arizona Governor Doug Ducey's plans are for his now vacant Senate seat?
Well, he has a very tough decision. He has to appoint a Republican. That's in the state law. And it has to be someone who will serve through the remainder of the McCain term. There's not going to be a special election. Are you going to go for the McCain, what's now known as a moderate wing, or are you going to go with the more extreme-based Donald Trump side of the Republican Party? It's unclear right now. One name that's been suggested as sort of someone who might fit both, satisfy both sides, is the former senator from Arizona, John Kyle, who's a close friend of John McCain. I think that might work out, but you don't know if the governor has other ideas in mind right now.
And one idea I heard was Cindy McCain.
That has been talked about. I don't know if she would accept it. I don't think that would be received very well by the Trump base right now to have another McCain in the Senate.
CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman covering the death and life and legacy of Senator John McCain. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's turn now to Aretha Franklin. A memorial service was held for the Queen of Soul Friday at a Detroit Baptist church. The hours-long event featured musicians like Smokey Robinson, Stevie Wonder, and Ariana Grande. Among those also paying tribute to Franklin's life, former President Bill Clinton.
Yeah, she had the voice of a generation, maybe the voice of a century. Yeah, she was born into a musical culture. Yes, she sat on the steps in her home and listened to Art Tatum, maybe the greatest jazz pianist who ever lived, play. But she also worked for years, I mean years, springing out of the church and the gospel music to the R&B clubs, the jazz clubs, the places where soul was being born, the places where rock and roll was being played. When nobody was paying particular attention.
Franklin died August 16th of pancreatic cancer. Aretha Franklin was 76. Coming up, why the president's taking aim at Google and other tech companies. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. President Trump says he's excited about the person who's taking the place of his chief counsel at the White House. It comes after he announced on Twitter Don McGahn will leave, he says, hopefully after the confirmation of Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh.
His departure has been rumored for months, but McGahn was surprised by the president's tweet because the two men had not directly discussed it. McGahn was the lead attorney for the Trump campaign, but the relationship between the president and his top lawyer has been rocky. McGahn threatened to resign in June 2017 over stress and frustration with the president. He also spent roughly 30 hours over 9 months being interviewed by special counsel Robert Mueller's team. The president said he approved McGahn's cooperation and isn't worried about what he may have revealed.
Any concern about what he said to the Mueller team?
No, not at all.
One reason McGahn hung on, His role in helping to confirm 60 conservative judges to the federal courts, including Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch.
Correspondent Paula Reed reporting. President Trump also speaking out about Google, Facebook, and Twitter, blaming them for censoring conservative voices.
President Trump criticized the world's most popular search engine Tuesday morning. He tweeted, "Google search results for Trump News shows only the viewing, reporting of fake news media. Google and others are suppressing voices of conservatives and hiding information and news that is good. This is a very serious situation. Will be addressed."
Google and Twitter and Facebook, they're really treading on very, very troubled territory, and they have to be careful. It's not fair to large portions of the population.
Google denies they are manipulating search results to keep conservative voices quiet. They issued a statement saying, "Search is not used to set a political agenda, and we don't bias our results toward any political ideology."
There's no evidence that there's any kind of manipulation going on with regard to the president.
Harold Feld works for Public Knowledge, a nonprofit group advocating for citizen rights in media and technology. He says the rules need to be written so they don't favor one political party over the other. But he adds, regulations are needed.
It's too important to just be left to the companies.
Democratic Senator Chris Coons says there are reasons to be concerned about the power of companies like Google, but still, he opposed the president's tweet.
For the president to jump from, "I don't like my search results on Google this morning," to tweeting, "We need to regulate one of the largest, fastest growing, most creative companies in the American economy," is a bridge too far.
Mola Lenghi, CBS News, the White House.
Leaders of the companies will be on Capitol Hill for hearings on Wednesday. Even though the suspect in a deadly shooting last Sunday during a Florida video tournament had a history of serious mental illness, he was still able to legally buy the two handguns used in that attack. More from CBS News correspondent Manuel Bajorquez in Jacksonville.
I couldn't believe that, something like that had happened.
Kevin Osai attended high school and a few years of college with shooting suspect David Katz. He says Katz received counseling throughout high school.
If he got, upset, he would get vehement, very upset, all at once.
Authorities say David Katz had been eliminated from a Madden football video game tournament. Sometime later, he opened fire.
The suspect walked past patrons who were in other parts of the business and focused his attention on the gamers.
CBS News has learned through the suspect's parents' divorce records that as a teenager, Katz was diagnosed with chronic low-grade depression, was hospitalized twice for mental illness, and was prescribed antipsychotics and antidepressants. A vigil was held in the West Virginia hometown of 28-year-old Taylor Robertson, one of two victims killed in Sunday's shooting. In high school, he was a local hero, a standout scholar and athlete.
Katz was a minor during the time of his psychological treatment, so investigators are trying to determine whether that would have raised any red flags during his gun purchases. Manuel Bajorquez, CBS News, Jacksonville, Florida.
A white former Texas police officer has been sentenced to 15 years in prison for killing an unarmed black teen in April 2017.
We did it. We did it.
A visibly emotional Odell Edwards held back tears. The father of 15-year-old Jordan Edwards, overwhelmed by the verdict.
We, the jury, unanimously find the defendant guilty of murder.
After nearly 2 weeks of testimony, a jury convicted former Balch Springs police officer Roy Oliver of killing the unarmed teen. Body camera video from the night of the shooting shows Oliver and his partner responding to a loud house party. Oliver told the investigators he heard gunshots, saw a car headed towards his partner, and feared for his partner's life. He then fired 5 shots into the vehicle, hitting Edwards in the head and killing him. But the body cam video showed the car driving away from the officers, and Oliver's former partner testified that he never felt he was in danger.
Now I'm going to tell you right now, those jurors are courageous.
Jasmine Crockett is an attorney for the Edwards family.
It was a guilty on murder, not manslaughter, not some lesser included, but on murder.
So many times that you see on the TV that this has happened and nothing ever happens.
During Oliver's sentencing hearing, Edward's stepmother, Charmaine, spoke directly to the jury.
And I'm forever grateful that y'all seen it in your hearts to see that it was wrong. And I'm thankful. Because for once, it doesn't bring Jordan back, but we have some kind of closure.
Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Dallas.
A Guatemalan woman is planning to sue the U.S. government after she says her baby died after getting sick in a Texas immigration facility. They entered the country illegally back in March, seeking asylum.
She had an amazing smile and chubby cheeks. She had never had any serious medical conditions or any chronic medical conditions of any kind. She was a healthy kid.
Lawyers for Yasmin Juarez say her daughter Marie was examined and cleared for custody by medical staff at the South Texas Family Residential Center in March. Juarez's lawyer, Stanton Jones, says within days the toddler developed a respiratory infection after sharing a room with other children, some of whom were sick.
What started with a cough and congestion and runny nose turned into intermittent fevers, sometimes spiking as high as over 104 degrees.
Lawyers say medical staff prescribed an antibiotic, Tylenol, and honey, among other treatments, but Marie's health continued to decline.
The medical care that Marie received inside Dilley was woefully inadequate, neglectful, and substandard.
Legal papers filed Tuesday say Marie was still sick when she and her mother were released to live with family in New Jersey. Hours later, the child was admitted to the hospital. 6.5 weeks later, Marie died. ICE declined to comment on Marie's case due to pending litigation, but in a statement, the agency says it takes very seriously the health, safety, and welfare of those in our care, including providing access to necessary and appropriate medical care.
To Yasmin, justice means more than just money. Nothing can ever bring her daughter back. But she wants to make sure that this never happens again.
Correspondent Maria Villarreal reporting. Up next, a powerful storm is taking aim for Japan.
Fed by warm ocean waters, Jebi is expected to morph into a super typhoon.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Because I have no reason to lie.
With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. President Trump's acting to prevent federal workers from getting an automatic pay raise this year.
In a letter suspending the scheduled 2.1% raise in the general schedule on which federal workers' salaries are based, the president cites the nation's fiscal situation. Even as he touts progress in the overall economy, Mr. Trump has also presided over a dramatic increase in the budget deficit, largely due to his tax cuts.
Correspondent Stephen Portnoy reporting from the White House. The Justice Department is weighing in on a discrimination lawsuit against Harvard University. The suit claims the school illegally limits the number of Asian Americans admitted.
In a 40-page legal brief, the Justice Department said Harvard engages in unlawful racial balancing when selecting its incoming classes, siding with Asian American students who are suing the university. Harvard's race-based admissions process significantly disadvantages Asian American applicants, the Justice Department said. The court filing comes as Harvard is fighting to avoid a trial in the 2014 lawsuit, which argues the university holds Asian American students to higher academic standards than white and other minority students, allegations Harvard denies. The filing was widely expected, as the Justice Department targets affirmative action in college admissions on multiple fronts. Last month, it reversed Obama-era guidelines that encouraged schools to consider race in college admissions. In recent years, Asian Americans have become vocal opponents of affirmative action. Kelly Babfavong is a junior at Harvard.
Harvard really only cares about diversity when it comes to forming a class of X percent of people, which we've seen is wrong. We can't set quotas on what percent of each race we admit.
But civil rights attorney Michelle Turnage-Young says all students would suffer without affirmative action.
We have so many well-documented racial disparities in access to educational opportunities in primary school and secondary school. Colleges need to be able to have a way to take those things into account.
Now, affirmative action could be front and center in confirmation hearings for Judge Brett Kavanaugh. He would be replacing Justice Anthony Kennedy, who is a key swing vote, and it refused to end all affirmative action in college admissions. Jan Crawford, CBS News, Washington.
The Vatican Secretary of State says Pope Francis is serene, despite the bitterness and concern in the Catholic Church over accusations in a scathing letter to him from a former top Vatican official accusing him of covering up sexual misconduct. CBS News correspondent Seth Doan has more from the Vatican, where Francis addressed the scandal during a weekly mass Wednesday.
As Pope Francis addressed those in St. Peter's Square, we found some struggling with their faith.
You don't want to be open about your faith.
Really?
Controversy has made you ashamed of your faith?
Not ashamed, but it's more of when other people of other faiths, when they're looking at you and they're talking to you, that's all they know is what they're seeing on the news.
That letter, penned by a former top Vatican diplomat, called for the Pope's resignation and alleged the pontiff knowingly allowed a sex abuser, Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, to continue operating at the highest ranks of the church unpunished. Monsignor Carlo Viganò's 11-page letter included sweeping conservative ideological commentary, including railing against homosexuals in the church. Viganò did not provide any documents to support his accusations that at least 35 church leaders were involved in covering up abuse. While many bishops have condemned Viganò, others have called for an investigation. Monsignor Karel Castile has worked for 7 popes and has known Viganò since he was a young seminarian.
He's certainly an honest person, and he's done his job well, and I think he felt that he had to talk.
Viganò's letter comes in the wake of that grand jury report that exposed 300 pedophile priests and 1,000-plus victims in Pennsylvania. The state attorney general appeared on CBS this morning.
And I can tell you that there is facts, there is evidence that takes this cover-up and what occurred in Pennsylvania directly to the Vatican.
The director of the Holy See press office told CBS News that if the attorney general was referring to something outside of the report, they would have to see that before making any comment. And today, Italian media is reporting that close associates of Pope Francis say that he is saddened but is not considering resignation.
Seth Doan reporting. It's the peak of hurricane season as meteorologists closely watch a storm that may develop in the Atlantic and impact the U.S. right now. But about a year after Hurricane Maria devastated Puerto Rico, we have a new tally of the number of people it killed there.
It just got me sad.
Nicole Cordero told us that her 47-year-old mother, Wanda, indirectly died as a result of Hurricane Maria. Wanda had pancreatitis and needed oxygen when the power went out at the hospital where she was being treated.
I wish the hospitals were more prepared.
A government commissioned review done by George Washington University researchers looked at the 6 months after Hurricane Maria and compared the number of deaths to the same time period in 7 previous years. The findings bumped the official death toll from an estimated 64 to 2,975. The mayor of San Juan called the new report painful and shameful and said the governor should take more responsibility.
When I saw people dying, I opted to shout it. I opted to ask for help. When others saw people dying, they opted to shut up.
Governor Ricardo Rosselló acknowledged Tuesday that he's made mistakes.
The focus should be who's going to be accountable and who's going to take the action so that this doesn't happen again.
Researchers found that the government and hospitals were inadequately prepared for the Category 4 storm. They also found that the risk of death was 45% higher for those living in low-income areas on the island and that elderly men were at the greatest risk of dying. But there were young people who were otherwise healthy, like 29-year-old Ramsey Romero, who also died. His brother Christian told us that Ramsey contracted a treatable bacterial disease. He had been helping his community clean up after the hurricane. I think the government was negligent, Christian told us.
What does your brother deserve?
I think my brother deserves justice.
One of the most glaring items in the report is the fact that physicians admitted to not having the proper training to know exactly how to classify a death as being storm-related. The government didn't have anybody with that expertise either. And so when the government kept saying the death toll was 64, they were talking about direct deaths like flying debris or drowning. But they weren't accounting for deaths such as someone who died in the hospital because the hospital had no power. The governor says he's establishing a commission to implement every recommendation
made by George Washington University. David Begno, CBS News, San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Powerful Typhoon Jebi is threatening to slam into Japan in just days.
Japan's weather agency has described Typhoon Jebi as a violent intensity tropical cyclone. Fed by warm ocean waters, Jebi is expected to morph into a super typhoon with winds of 150 miles per hour, equaling a Category 4 hurricane. It's on course to strike the main Japanese islands with extreme rain and damaging winds. Lucy Kraft, CBS News, Tokyo.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, what's at stake for warring fishermen in the English Channel?
Some of the richest scallop fishing is on the French side.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. On Twitter, President Trump has been trying to reassure Americans that things are good between the U.S. and North Korea while taking a jab at China.
In a statement tweeted out by the president, he said he has a good relationship with Kim Jong-un. Mr. Trump went on to say that he believes North Korea is under tremendous pressure from China, but that Beijing is also supplying Pyongyang with aid, including fuel, fertilizer, and commodities. The president wrapped up his tweets by saying, "This is not helpful." Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
The president canceled a high-level trip by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to North Korea last week, saying the country hasn't shown enough progress denuclearizing. Defense Secretary James Mattis also said there's no plans to suspend any more U.S. military exercises on the Korean Peninsula.
We took the step to suspend several of the largest exercises as a good faith measure coming out of the Singapore summit. We have no plans at this time to suspend any more exercises.
The president's also taking aim at Canada, choosing to take a hard line with the country while pressuring it to join a new NAFTA trade deal with Mexico. The Toronto Star reported Friday the president boasted in an interview saying, quote, "I can kill these people." It's unclear when a deal might be reached. A chemical weapons attack in England is prompting new interest in ways to protect folks from future exposures.
The use of the Russian nerve agent Novichok in the assassination attempt of double agent Sergei Skripal was a violation of international law banning the use of chemical weapons. And chemical weapons specialist Hamish de Breton Gordon calls it a turning point.
The 100-year taboo on the use of chemical weapons is completely broken.
He says it only took a couple drops of Novichok to shut down parts of Salisbury for months.
If it can happen in Salisbury, you know, it can happen in Baltimore or Philadelphia.
He now works for a company that has provided 2 million gas masks to the U.S. military, as well as the NYPD and first responders. They've been supplying respirators to U.S. forces for years, designed to protect them against an attack and enable them to operate in a contaminated area. But lately, there's been an increase in interest in escape hoods.
You rip it open, and then quite simply, you just take this stuff out and then put your hands in, and now you're safe.
Specifically designed for civilian use, they're cheaper and easier to use. 30 seconds to hold your breath, get it on, and get away.
What's happening is that
Eamon Dean, a former al-Qaeda member turned British spy, says the Salisbury attack will inspire terrorists.
The Novichok attack was a big neon sign advertisement, basically, for al-Qaeda and ISIS.
American forces have stepped up training for chemical warfare on the battlefield. After Salisbury, counterterrorism teams have to prepare for a different kind of chemical warfare, far from it. Charlie Daggett, CBS News, Wiltshire, England.
A dispute between British and French fishermen in the English Channel escalated Tuesday night over scallops.
There was ramming on the high seas as the dispute over shellfish turned ugly. English fishermen say a flotilla of French boats swarmed them, and the French hurled insults and rocks to drive them off the scallop beds.
Before we knew it, we had around 10, maybe 15 other French boats surrounding us, throwing rocks at us, flares. It was quite an intense moment.
This stretch of water may be called the English Channel, but some of the richest scallop fishing is on the French side. It attracts fishermen from both countries eager to cash in on this lucrative delicacy. But clashing international rules say the English boats can fish anytime, while the French are forced to wait until the 1st of October. It makes French fishermen like Anthony Cannell furious. We're trying to get rid of the English, he said, because if we let them get away with this, they are going to clear out the whole area. In the end, the English boats retreated, home to port. But the English fishermen say if negotiations don't solve this standoff in the coming days, they'll be back for round two. Elizabeth Palmer, CBS News, London.
New efforts to combat smokeless cigarette use by kids.
This is coming to epidemic proportions, and it's dangerous.
Mother of four, Meredith Berkman, says she couldn't sit and wait for the government to stop kids from using the e-cigarette Juul. So she and two other moms recently launched the grassroots group Parents Against Vaping to educate about the dangers of e-cigarettes, advocate against their use, and lobby for legislative action.
I know what these teens are doing, and I don't want my 11-year-old to get caught up in that either, and we have to act about that now.
Vaping can deliver nicotine to your brain, reprogramming you to crave more and more.
The FDA says its expanded campaign will use ads like this one from 2017 to try to convince teens not to vape. In April, the agency requested internal documents from Juul on areas including the company's research and marketing. Of particular concern to advocacy groups, prior social media campaigns using young models in groups and bright colors. Back in June, Juul executive Ashley Gould told us the company had changed its marketing approach and did not mean to attract teens.
I will take the criticism that we should have known. I will take that criticism. But we know now we're working very hard and we are committed.
In January of this year, Juul began a pilot program directed at schools suggesting Juul could help discourage e-cigarette use. In emails obtained by CBS News, its consultant wrote the program was designed to provide either an in-school program or a Saturday school alternative to discipline, and that Juul would fund the program. But some educators were skeptical, and Juul has since dropped the idea, telling us in a statement, "We soon learned through feedback from schools, educators, and policymakers that our efforts were largely discouraged."
I'm not surprised that this program got bad reviews.
Matt Myers with the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids says that campaign resembled prior tobacco industry efforts.
School administrators wisely recognize that it's simply an effort to get the name of the company before kids in a favorable way. Thus, it is responsible administrators who said, "We don't want you in our schools. We will educate our children."
Juul denies its program was based on any tobacco industry ideas. The company says it's working with the Iowa Attorney General to stop teen use of Juul. It also says it's trying to restrict youth access to Juul and is focused on helping adult smokers switch to Juul from regular cigarettes. Anna Werner, CBS News, New York.
A new warning about a rise in STDs in the U.S. from the CDC.
Nearly 2.3 million cases of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis were diagnosed in the U.S. in 2017. That's 200,000 more cases than the year before, which was also a year that saw a record high number of cases, according to the CDC. Gonorrhea cases that were reported to the CDC increased by nearly 67%, and there is concern about antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea that's been seen nationwide. If gonorrhea becomes resistant to all combinations of antibiotic therapies, it could become an untreatable STD.
Coming up, how the Farmer's Almanac peers into the future.
Our method goes back to 1792 and involves the solar cycle.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant at our nation's capital with newsmakers like Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy. Do you think it would be wise for the president to sit down for an interview with Robert Mueller?
I do.
Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez.
This president has absolutely no moral compass.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Colin Kaepernick may be an out-of-work quarterback, but he's about to see some action in court where his grievance against the NFL may be headed.
The case is expected to go to trial after an arbitrator's ruling that there was enough evidence to show NFL owners colluded to keep him off the field, he says, because of his refusal to stand for the national anthem. It could be bad news for the NFL. Bob Dorfman is a sports marketing expert.
The last thing I think they want is to have owners sitting in court answering questions about this.
None of this means a job for Kaepernick, who hasn't played in nearly 2 years. Peter King, CBS News.
Tim Clark is a contributing editor to the Old Farmer's Almanac, just out with its 2019 edition. Tim, I think most folks really want to know about the weather. Is there a way to sum up what we're expecting in the U.S. for the winter?
For the country as a whole, we think it's going to be a warmer than normal winter with less snowfall than usual, which is not surprising. That's the trend it's been for the last few years.
How is the book adapting to things like climate change?
We've been watching it for a long time, and you may know that our method goes back to 1792 and involves the solar cycle. Some people refer to it as the sunspot cycle. It's a pretty regular 11 to 13-year cycle of increasing solar radiation and decreasing solar radiation. So you'd think that it would have nothing to do with conditions here on Earth, but we've come to the conclusion that we have to put in a climate change factor in here because the evidence is just too great. It's staring us in the face. That said, we are now in one of the lowest solar cycles in 100 years, less solar radiation reaching the atmosphere. By our theory, that should mean cooler weather. So the fact that it's getting warmer also suggests that things are happening here on the surface of the Earth that affect our methods.
What are some of the other highlights when it comes to, say, space? What should we be expecting in terms of astronomical data?
Well, one of the great things about the Almanac to me, going all the way back to the 18th century, is it's a handheld calculator that will tell you what's happening in the sky. And people, especially these days who live in cities and suburban areas, find it hard to even see what's happening at night in the sky. So this is a way you can check and make sure to be up for the eclipses and the conjunctions. It's a way of getting back in touch with nature as our grandparents and great-grandparents knew it.
What about when it comes to phenomena going on Earth or outside of Earth?
We look at astronomy. It's important. We look at astrology, too, although our founder, Robert B. Thomas, would have been upset about that. When he first began this almanac, he wanted nothing to do with astrology. But since we're the oldest continuously published periodical in North America, we feel that we have to look, you know, at least pay a respectful glance to astrology because so many people believe in it, and it is a historical factor. We don't focus on it. For example, we have an article this year on the ecliptic, the zodiac, as some people know it. What is the zodiac? Why is it called the zodiac? I was surprised to learn that title comes from the Greek word for zoo. It's all but a couple of them are animals. But it's more importantly, it's the path that the sun and the moon follow across the sky. And therefore, any eclipse, for example, has to happen in that particular band of sky, which is why it's called the ecliptic.
As you know, there's some critics, though, of the almanac and of the astrology element of it.
Critics of the almanac? Surely not.
They call it pseudoscience. So what can you tell me about the kind of research that goes into the book or how you try to balance out some of the more, perhaps less scientific elements of it?
We do use science. We spend a lot of money every year on our forecast. We use the disciplines of solar science, as I said a second ago, meteorology and climatology. We're factoring in the big Pacific currents in the ocean, El Nino and La Nina, which we know have effect all over the United States. But at the same time, we are the respectful custodians of 227 years of American folklore. And so we need to nod in that direction, just as we look carefully at other aspects of folklore. I happen to study folklore in college, and so that's kind of my special field. And I wrote a couple of articles for this year's Almanac. One is about the so-called lunar effect. You know, do people really go wacky during a full moon? Experts in many fields believe it. The evidence is not there. And so it's interesting to speculate about why so many people will say, oh, it must be a full moon if there's crazy things happening. Part of it is the confirmation bias, which means that you look at evidence that supports what you already believe, but not if it doesn't support your beliefs. Nobody says, oh, it must be a third quarter moon when something funny happens, because it's not a well-known belief. I also wrote one about beekeeping, which goes way back, thousands and thousands of years, and has rich and fascinating folklore, one of the most interesting of which is the custom of telling the bees. If something important happens in your family, especially a death, or the death of a prominent person like the King of England, it's very important, it's believed, for beekeepers to go out and tell the bees. Otherwise, the bees might get upset and swarm and leave the hives. And that's a disaster for a beekeeper.
Even bees need news.
Even bees, bees are very sensitive. That's what I learned about this. You're not supposed to swear in front of bees. You're not supposed to quarrel with your wife in front of the bees. And you never, ever pay cash for bees if you're buying bees from someone. You do it by barter, or you leave the cash in a particular place and walk away from it, expecting the person you're buying it from to come pick it up.
Contributing editor to the Old Farmer's Almanac, Tim Clark, on the Weekend Roundup. Thank you, Tim.
My pleasure.
A brand new look for a top fashion magazine.
The cover girl for Cosmopolitan's October UK edition is plus-size model and Tennessee native Tess Holliday. She's featured in a forest green bathing suit in full curvy glory. With tattoos covering both arms and her upper leg, she's blowing a kiss to readers. Holliday tweets that if she saw a body like hers on the magazine when she was a young girl, it would have changed her life. She tells Cosmo she's the heaviest she's ever been and finally loves herself. Holliday has already appeared on the covers of People and LA Weekly. She was also named one of the world's top plus-size models by Vogue Italia. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show is always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.